sunlight out into the midday heat. It was like a furnace. Hack Walker was on his own next to the Lincoln, getting ready to leave.
"Hot enough for you?"
he asked, with his politician's smile. "I'll survive," Reacher said.
"Going to be a storm."
"So people say." Walker nodded.
"Reacher, right?"
Reacher nodded.
"So everything went okay in Abilene, I guess."
"Like clockwork," Hack said.
"But I'm tired, believe me. Texas is a big, big place. You can forget that sometimes. You can drive forever. So I'm leaving these folks to their celebrations and hitting the rack. Gratefully, let me tell you."
Reacher nodded again.
"So I'll see you around, maybe." "Don't forget to vote in November," Hack replied. "For me, preferably."
He used the same bashful expression he had used the night before. Then he paused at the car door and waved across the roof to Sloop. Sloop made a gun with his fingers and leveled it at Hack and pursed his lips like he was supplying the sound of the shot. Hack slid into the car and fired it up and backed into a turn and headed for the gate. He paused a second and made a right and accelerated away, and a moment later Reacher was watching a new cone of dust drifting north along the road. Then he turned back and saw Sloop strolling up across the yard, holding Ellie's hand in his right and Carmen's in his left. His eyes were screwed tight against the sun. Carmen was saying nothing, and Ellie was saying a lot. They all walked straight past him and up the steps, three abreast. They paused at the door, and Sloop turned his right shoulder to allow Ellie in ahead of him. He followed her across the threshold, and then turned his shoulder the other way to pull Carmen in after him. The door closed on them, hard enough to raise a puff of hot dust off the porch floorboards. Reacher saw nobody except the maid for nearly 3 hours. He stayed inside the bunkhouse, and she brought him lunch, and then came back to collect the plate an hour later. Time to time he would watch the house from the high bathroom window, but it was closed up tight, and he saw nothing at all. Then, late in the afternoon, he heard voices behind the horse barn, and walked up there and found Sloop and Carmen and Ellie out and about, taking the air. It was still very hot, maybe hotter than ever. Sloop looked restless. He was sweating. He was scuffing his shoes through the dirt. Carmen looked very nervous. Her face was slightly red. Maybe tension. Maybe strain. Maybe the fearsome heat. But it wasn't impossible she had been slapped a couple of times either.
"Ellie, come with me to see your pony," she said. "I saw him this morning, Mommy,"
Ellie said. Carmen held out her hand.
"But I didn't. So let's go see him again."
Ellie looked mystified for a second, and then she took Carmen's hand. They stepped behind Sloop and set off slowly for the front of the barn. Carmen turned her head and mouthed, "Talk to him," as she walked. Sloop turned around and watched them go, turned back and looked at Reacher, like he was seeing him for the first time.
"Sloop Greer," he said, and held out his hand.
Up close, he was an older, wiser version of Bobby. A little older. Maybe a lot wiser. There was intelligence in his eyes. Not necessarily a pleasant sort of intelligence. It wasn't hard to imagine some cruelty there. Reacher shook his hand. It was big-boned, but soft. It was a bully's hand, not a fighter's.
"Jack Reacher," he said. "How was prison?"
There was a split-second flash of surprise in the eyes. Then it was replaced by instant calm.
Good self-control, Reacher thought. "It was pretty awful," Sloop said. "You been in yourself?"
"Quick, too." "On the other side of the bars from you," Reacher said. Sloop nodded.
"Bobby told me you were a cop. Now you're an itinerant worker."
"I have to be. I didn't have a rich daddy." Sloop paused a beat.
You were military, right? In the Army? Right, the Army. I never cared much for the military myself. So I gathered. Yeah? How? Well, I hear you opted out of paying for it. Another flash in the eyes, quickly gone. Not easy to rile, Reacher thought. But a spell in prison teaches anybody to keep things well below the surface. Shame you spoiled it by crying uncle and getting out early.
You think?
Reacher nodded. If you can't do the time, then don't do the crime. You got out of the Army, so maybe you couldn't do the time either.
Reacher smiled. Thanks for the opening, he thought.
I had no choice, he said. Fact is, they threw me out.
Yeah? Why?
I broke the law, too.
Yeah? How?
Some scumbag of a colonel was beating up on his wife. Nice young woman. He was a furtive type of a guy. Did it all in secret, so I couldn't prove it. But I wasn't about to let him get away with it. That wouldn't have been right, because I don't like men who hit women. So one night I caught him on his own. No witnesses. He's in a wheelchair now, drinks through a straw, wears a bib because he drools all the time.
Sloop said nothing. He was so silent the skin at the inside corners of his eyes turned dark purple.
Walk away now, Reacher thought, and you're confessing it to me. But Sloop stayed exactly where he was, very still, staring into space, seeing nothing. Then he recovered. The eyes came back into focus. Not quickly, but not too slowly, either. A smart guy.
Well, that makes me feel better, he said, about withholding my taxes. They might have ended up in your pocket.
You don't approve?
No,
I don't, Sloop said.
Of who?
Either of you, Sloop said. You or the other guy.
Then he turned and walked away. Reacher went back to the bunkhouse. The maid brought him dinner and came back for the plate. Full darkness fell outside, and the night insects started up with their crazy chant. He lay down on his bed and sweated. The temperature stayed rock steady around 100 degrees. He heard isolated coyote howls again, and cougar screams, and the invisible beating of bats' wings. Then he heard a light tread on the bunkhouse stair. He sat up in time to see Carmen come up into the room. She had one hand pressed flat on her chest, like she was out of breath, or panicking, or both.
"Sloop talked to Bobby," she said. "For ages."
"Did he hit you?" Reacher asked. Her hand went up to her cheek.
"No,"
she said.
"Did he?"
She looked away.
"Well, just once," she said. "Not hard."
"I should go break his arms."
"He called the sheriff."
"Who did?"
"Sloop."
"When?"
"Just now. He talked to Bobby and then he called."
"About me?"
She nodded.
"He wants you out of here."
"It's okay," Reacher said. "The sheriff won't do anything."
"You think?"
Reacher nodded. "I squared him away before."
She paused a beat.
"I've got to get back now. He thinks I'm with Ellie."
"You want me to come with you?"
"Not yet. Let me talk to him first."
"Don't let him hit you again, Carmen. Come get me soon as you need me. Or make noise, okay? Scream and shout."
She started back down the stairs.
"I will," she said. "I promise. You sure about the sheriff?"
"Don't worry," he said. "The sheriff won't do a thing."
But the sheriff did one thing. He passed the problem to the state police. Reacher found that out 90 minutes later when a Texas Ranger cruiser turned in under the gate looking for him. Somebody directed it all the way down past the barns and in behind the bunkhouse. He heard its motor and the sound of its tires crushing the dust on the track. He got off of his bed and went down the stairs, and when he got to the bottom, he was lit up by the spotlight mounted in front of its windshield. It shone in past the parked farm tractors and picked him out in a bright cone of light. The car doors opened, and two Rangers got out. They were not similar to the sheriff, not in any way. They were in a different class altogether. They were young and fit and professional. Both of them were medium height. Both of them were halfway between lean and muscled. Both had military-style buzz cuts. Both had immaculate uniforms. One was a sergeant, and the other was a trooper. The trooper was Hispanic. He was holding a shotgun.
What? Reacher called. Step to the hood of the car?
The sergeant called back. Reacher kept his hands clear of his body and walked to the car.
Assume the position, the sergeant said.
Reacher put his palms on the fender and leaned down. The sheet metal was hot from the engine. The trooper covered him with the shotgun, and the sergeant patted him down.
Okay, get in the car, he said.
Reacher didn't move.
What's this about? He asked.
A request from a property owner to remove a trespasser.
I'm not a trespasser. I work here. Well, I guess they just terminated you. So now you're a trespasser, and we're going to remove you.
That's a state police job?
Small community like this, we're on call to help the local guys, their days off, or serious crimes.
Trespassing is a serious crime?
No. Sunday is the Echo Sheriff's day off.
The moths had found the spotlight. They fluttered in and crowded the lens, landing and taking off again when the heat of the bulb got to them. They batted against Reacher's right arm. They felt dry and papery and surprisingly heavy.
Okay, I'll leave, he said. I'll walk out to the road. Then you'll be a vagrant on a county highway. That's against the law, too, around here, especially during the hours of darkness.
So where are we going?
You have to leave the county. We'll let you out in Pecos.
They owe me money. I never got paid.
So, get in the car. We'll stop at the house.
Reacher glanced left at the trooper and the shotgun. Both of them looked businesslike. He glanced right at the sergeant. He had his hand on the butt of his gun. He saw in his mind the two Greer boys, two versions of the same face, both of them grinning, smug and triumphant. But it was Rusty he saw mouthing, "Checkmate," at him.
There's a problem here, he said. The daughter-in-law is getting smacked around by her husband. It's an ongoing situation. He just got out of prison today.
She made a complaint?
She's scared to. The sheriff's a good old boy, and she's a Hispanic woman from California. Nothing we can do without a complaint.
Reacher glanced the other way at the trooper, who just shrugged.
Like the man told you, he said. Nothing we can do without we hear about it.
You're hearing about it now, Reacher said. I'm telling you. The trooper shook his head.
Needs to come from the victim.
Get in the car, the sergeant said.
You don't have to do this.
Yes, we do.
I need to be here, for the woman's sake.
Listen, pal, we were informed you're trespassing, so all we got is a question of whether you're wanted here or whether you're not, and apparently you're not.
The woman wants me here, like her bodyguard.
Is she the property owner?
No, she isn't.
Are you employed by her, Like, officially?
Reacher shrugged. More or less.
She paying you? You got a contract we can see?
Reacher said nothing.
So, get in the car.
She's in danger.
We get a call, we'll come running.
She can't call.
Or if she does, the sheriff won't pass it on.
Then there's nothing we can do.
Now, get in the car.
Reacher said nothing. The sergeant opened the rear door. Then he paused.
You could come back tomorrow, he said quietly. No law says a man can't try to get himself rehired.
Reacher took a second look at the shotgun. It was a big, handsome Ithaca with a muzzle wide enough to stick his thumb in. He took a second look at the sergeant's handgun. It was a Glock, secured into an oiled leather holster by a strap that would take about half a second to unfasten.
But right now,
get in the car. Checkmate.
Okay, Reacher said. But I'm not happy. Very few of our passengers are, the sergeant said back.
He used his hand on the top of Reacher's head and folded him into the back seat. It was cold in there. There was a heavy wire barrier in front of him. Either side, the door handles and the window winders had been removed. Small squares of aluminum had been riveted over the holes in the trim. The seat was vinyl. There was a smell of disinfectant and a heavy stink from an air freshener shaped like a pine tree hanging from the mirror in front. There was a radar device built up on top of the dash and quiet radio chatter coming from a unit underneath it. The sergeant and the troopers swung in together in front and drove him up to the house. All the Greers except Ellie were on the porch to see him go. They were standing in a line at the rail. First Rusty, then Bobby, then Sloop and Carmen. They were all smiling. All except Carmen. The sergeant stopped the car at the foot of the steps and buzzed his window down.
This guy says you owe him wages, he called.
There was silence for a second, just the sound of the insects.
So tell him to sue us, Bobby called back.
Reacher leaned forward to the metal grill.
Carmen, he shouted. Si hay un problema, llama directamente a estos hombres.
The sergeant turned his head.
What?
Nothing.
So what do you want to do? The sergeant asked. About your money.
Forget about it, Reacher said.
The sergeant buzzed his window up again and pulled out toward the gate. Reacher craned his neck and saw them all turn to watch him go. All except for Carmen, who stood absolutely still and stared rigidly ahead at the spot where the car had just been. The sergeant made a right onto the road, and Reacher turned his head the other way and saw them all filing back into the house. Then the sergeant accelerated hard, and they were lost to sight.
What was that you called out to them?
He asked. Reacher said nothing. The trooper answered for him.
It was Spanish, he said, for the woman. It meant, Carmen, if there's trouble, call these guys direct.
Terrible accent. Reacher said nothing. They drove the same 60 miles he had covered the other way in the white Cadillac, back to the crossroads hamlet with Ellie's school and the gas station and the old diner. The sergeant stuck to a lazy 55 all the way, and it took an hour and 5 minutes. When they got there, everything was closed up tight. There were lights burning in two of the houses, and nothing else. Then they drove the stretch where Carmen had chased the school bus. Nobody talked. Reacher sprawled sideways on the vinyl bench and watched the darkness. Another 20 minutes north, he saw the turn where Carmen had come down out of the hills. They didn't take it. They just kept on going, heading for the main highway, and then Pecos beyond it. They never got there. The radio call came in a mile short of the county line, an hour and 35 minutes into the ride. The call was bored and laconic and loud with static. A woman dispatcher's voice.
Blue 5,
it said. The trooper unhooked the microphone and stretched the cord and clicked the switch.
Blue 5, copy, over, he said. Required at the Red House Ranch, immediately, 60 miles south of North Echo Crossroads, domestic disturbance reported, over.
Copy. Nature of incident, over.
Unclear at this time, believed violent, over.
Well, shit, the sergeant said.
Copy.
On our way. Out, the trooper said. He replaced the microphone, turned around.
So, she understood your Spanish. I guess your accent wasn't too far off after all.
Reacher said nothing. The sergeant turned his head.
Look on the bright side, pal, he said. Now we can do something about it.
I warned you, Reacher said, and you should have damn well listened to me. So if she's hurt bad, it's on you, pal.
The sergeant said nothing to that, just jammed on the brakes and pulled a wide, slow turn across the whole of the road, shoulder to shoulder, got it pointing straight south again, and hustled. He got it up to 100 on the straightaways, kept it at 90 on the curves. He didn't use the lights or the siren, didn't even slow at the crossroads. He didn't need to. The chances of meeting traffic on that road were worse than winning the lottery. They were back again exactly 2 hours and 30 minutes after they left. 95 minutes north, 55 minutes south. First thing they saw was the sheriff's second-hand cruiser, dumped at an angle in the yard, door open, light bar flashing. The sergeant slewed through the dirt and jammed to a stop right behind it.
"How's he doing here?" he said. "It's his day off."
There was nobody in sight. The trooper opened his door. The sergeant shut down the motor and did the same.
"Let me out," Reacher said. "No dice, pal," the sergeant said back. "You stay right there."
They got out and walked together to the porch steps. They went up, across the boards. They pushed the door. It was open. They went inside. The door swung shut behind them. Reacher waited. 5 minutes. 7. 10. The car grew warm, then hot. There was silence, no sound at all beyond random static from the radio and the ticking of the insects. The trooper came out alone after about 12 minutes, walked slowly back to his side of the car, and opened his door and leaned in for the microphone.
"Is she okay?" Reacher asked.
The guy nodded, sourly.
"She's fine," he said, "at least physically, but she's in a shitload of trouble."
"Why?"
"Because the call wasn't about him attacking her. It was the other way around.
She shot him. He's dead. So we just arrested her." 10. The trooper clicked the microphone and called in for backup and an ambulance. Then he dictated an interim report to the dispatcher. He used the words gunshot wounds twice and homicide 3 times.
"Hey," Reacher called to him, "stop calling it homicide on the radio."
"Why?"
"Because it was self-defense. He was beating her. We all need to get that straight from the start."
"Not for me to say. You either."
Reacher shook his head. "It is for you to say, because what you say now counts for something later. You put it in people's heads it's a homicide, it'll be tough for her. Better that everybody's real clear from the start about what it is."
"I don't have that kind of influence."
"Yes, you do."
"How would you know what kind of influence I have?"
"Because I was you once upon a time. I was a cop in the military. I called things in.
I know how it works.
The trooper said nothing. She's got a kid, Reacher said. You should remember that. So she needs minimum bail, and she needs it tonight. You can influence that for her.
She shot him,
the trooper said. She should have thought about all that before. The guy was beating up on her. It was self-defense. The trooper said nothing.
Give her a break, okay? Don't make her a victim twice over.
She's the victim? Her husband is the one lying there dead. You should have sympathy. You must know how it is for her.
Why? What's the connection between her and me?
Now it was Reacher who said nothing.
You think I should cut her a break just because I'm Hispanic? And she is, too?
You wouldn't be cutting her a break, Reacher said. You'd be being accurate, is all. She needs your help.
The trooper hung up the microphone.
Now you're offending me, he said.
He backed out of the car and slammed the door, walked away up to the house again.
Reacher glanced through the window to his right, toward the rocky land west of the compound, full of regret.
I knew how it would be, he thought. I should have made her leave the damn gun up there on the mesa, or I should have taken care of the whole thing myself.
The state cops stayed inside the house, and Reacher saw nothing until the backup arrived more than an hour later. It was an identical cruiser with another trooper driving and another sergeant riding alongside him. This time the trooper was white, and the sergeant was Hispanic. They got out of their car and walked straight into the house. The heat and the quiet came back. There were animal howls in the far distance, and the whisper of insects and the beating of invisible wings. Lights came on in some of the house windows, and then snapped off again. After 20 minutes, the Echo Sheriff left. He came out of the house and stumbled down the porch steps to his car. He looked tired and disoriented. His shirt was dark with sweat. He maneuvered his cruiser out from behind the tangle of police vehicles and drove away. Another hour later, the ambulance came. It had its emergency lights on. Reacher saw the night pulsing red far to the south, and then bright headlight beams and a boxy vehicle painted red and gold and white lurching in through the gate. It was marked Presidio Fire Department. Maybe it was the same truck Billy had called the night before. It turned a slow circle in the yard and backed up to the porch steps. The crew got out lazily and stretched and yawned in the dark. They knew they weren't about to be called on for their paramedic skills. They opened the rear doors and took out a rolling gurney, and the backup sergeant met them on the steps and led them inside. Reacher was sweating inside the car. It was airless and hot. He traced in his mind the medics walking through the interior hallways to the bedroom, attending to the corpse, lifting it onto the gurney, rolling the gurney out. It was going to be difficult to handle. There were narrow stairs and tight corners. But they came back out about as fast as was feasible and lifted the gurney down the porch steps. Sloop Greer was just a large, heavy shape on it, wound into a white sheet. The medics lined up the gurney with the rear of the ambulance and pushed. The wheels folded up, and the gurney slid inside, and the medics closed the doors on it. Then they stood around in a group with three of the cops. The trooper who Reacher had offended wasn't there. He must have been guarding Carmen somewhere inside the house. The three cops out in the yard were slow and relaxed. The excitement was over. The deal was done. So they were standing there a little deflated and maybe a little disappointed, like cops often get, like something had happened they were supposed to prevent from happening. Reacher knew exactly how they felt. They talked for a couple of minutes, and then the ambulance crew climbed back into their cab and bounced their vehicle across the yard to the gate. It paused there for a second and turned right and headed slowly north. The cops watched it until it was gone, and then they turned together and headed back inside the house. 5 minutes later, they came out again, all four of them, and this time they brought Carmen with them. She was dressed in the same jeans and shirt. Her hair was heavy with water. Her hands were cuffed behind her back. Her head was down and her face was pale and filmed with sweat and her eyes were blank. The backup cops held an elbow each. They brought her down the steps slowly and clumsily, three people moving out of step. They stopped and regrouped in the dirt and walked her over to their cruiser. The trooper opened the rear door, and the sergeant placed a hand on the top of her head and folded her inside. She offered no resistance. She was completely passive. Reacher saw her shuffle sideways on the seat, looking awkward and uncomfortable with her hands trapped behind her. Then she hitched her feet in after her, pointing her toes, suddenly looking elegant again. The trooper waited a beat and closed the door on her, and Rusty and Bobby came out on the porch to watch her go. Rusty's hair was a mess, like she had been to bed and gotten up again. She was wearing a short satin robe that shone in the porch lights. It was white, and below it her legs were as pale as the fabric. Bobby was behind her. He was in jeans and a t-shirt, and he was barefoot. They pressed up against the porch rail. Both of their faces were pale and stunned. Their eyes were wide and blank and staring. The backup cops climbed into their cruiser and started it up. The first two slid into the front of Reacher's car and did the same. They waited for the backup to ease ahead and then followed it out to the gate. Reacher turned his head and saw Rusty and Bobby craning to watch them go. The cars paused and turned right together and accelerated north. Reacher turned his head the other way, and the last thing he saw was Ellie stumbling out onto the porch. She was in her rabbit pajamas and was carrying a small bear in her left hand and had the knuckles of her right pressed hard into her mouth. The inside of the cop car cooled right down after about a mile. There was an aperture in the wire grill in front of him, and if he sat in the middle of the seat and ducked his head, he could line it up with the view through the windshield above the radar unit and below the mirror. It was like watching a movie unfold in front of him. The backup car swayed in the headlight beams, close and vivid and unreal in the intense, dusty blackness all around it. He couldn't see Carmen. Maybe she was slumped down in the seat, and her head was hidden behind the police lights stacked along the rear shelf behind the glass.
"Where are they taking her?" he called.
The sergeant shifted in his seat, answered 100 yards later.
"Take us," he said. "County jail."
"But this is Echo," Reacher said. "Not Pecos."
"There are 150 people in Echo County. You think they operate a separate jurisdiction just for them? With jails and all? And courthouses?"
"So how does it work?"
"Pecos picks it up. That's how it works. For all the little counties, around and about. All the administrative functions."
Reacher was quiet for a beat.
"Well, that's going to be a real big problem," he said.
"Why?"
"Because Hack Walker is the Pecos DA, and he was Snoop Greer's best buddy, so he'll be prosecuting the person who shot his friend."
"Worried about a conflict of interest?"
"Aren't you?"
"Not really," the sergeant said. "We know Hack. He's not a fool. He sees some defense counsel about to nail him for an impropriety, he'll pass on it. He'll have to, what's the word, excuse himself?"
"Recuse," Reacher said.
"Whatever. He'll give it to an assistant.
and I think both the Pecos ADAs are women, actually. So the self-defense thing, we got some sympathy.
It doesn't need sympathy, Reacher said. It's plain as day.
And Hack's running for judge in November, the sergeant said. Bear that in mind. Lots of Mexican votes in Pecos County. He won't let anybody do anything that'll give her lawyer a chance to make him look bad in the newspaper. So she's lucky, really. A Mexican woman shoots a white man in Echo, gets tried for it by a woman ADA in Pecos. Couldn't be better for her.
She's from California, Reacher said. She's not Mexican.
But she looks Mexican, the sergeant said. That's what's important to a guy who needs votes in Pecos County.
The two state police cruisers drove on in convoy. They caught and passed the ambulance just short of the school and the gas station and the diner at the crossroads, left it lumbering north in their wake.
The morgue's in Pecos, too, the sergeant said. One of the oldest institutions in town.
Yes,
they needed it right from the get-go. Pecos was that kind of a place.
Reacher nodded behind him.
Carmen told me, he said. It was the real Wild West. You going to stick around?
I guess so. I need to see she's okay. She told me there's a museum in town. Things to see. Somebody's grave.
Play Allison's, the sergeant said. Some old gunslinger.
Never killed a man who didn't need killing. The sergeant nodded in the mirror.
That could be her position, right? She could call it the Clay Allison defense.
Why not? Reacher said. It was justifiable homicide, any way you cut it. The sergeant said nothing to that.
Should be enough to make bail, at least, Reacher said.
She's got a kid back there. She needs bail, like tomorrow. The sergeant glanced in the mirror again.
Tomorrow could be tough, he said. There's a dead guy in the picture, after all.
Who's a lawyer? Hasn't got one.
She got money for one?
No.
Well, shit, the sergeant said.
What? Reacher asked.
How old is the kid?
6 and a half. The sergeant went quiet.
What? Reacher asked again. Having no lawyer is a big problem, is what. Kid's going to be 7 and a half before Mom even gets a bail hearing.
She'll get a lawyer, right?
Sure, the Constitution says so. But the question is, when? This is Texas.
You ask for a lawyer, you don't get one right away?
Not right away. You wait a long, long time. You get one when the indictment comes back. And that's how old Hack Walker is going to avoid his little conflict problem, isn't it? He'll just lock her up and forget about her. He'd be a fool not to. She's got no lawyer, who's to know? Could be Christmas before they get around to indicting her, by which time old Hack will be a judge, most likely, not a prosecutor. He'll be long gone. No more conflict of interest. Unless he happens to pull the case later, whereupon he'd have to excuse himself anyway.
Recuse.
Whatever. Not having her own lawyer changes everything.
The trooper in the passenger seat turned and spoke for the first time in an hour.
"See," he said. "Didn't matter what I called it on the radio."
"So don't you spend your time at the museum," the sergeant said. "You want to help her? You go find her a lawyer. You go beg, borrow, or steal her one."
Nobody spoke the rest of the way into Pecos County. They crossed under Interstate 10 and followed the backup car across more empty blackness all the way to Interstate 20, about 100 miles west of where Reacher had forced his way out of Carmen's Cadillac 60 hours previously. The sergeant slowed the car and let the backup disappear ahead into the darkness. He braked and pulled off onto the shoulder 100 yards short of the cloverleaf.
"We're back on patrol from here," he said. "Time to let you out."
"Can't you drive me to the jail?"
"You're not going to jail. You haven't done anything. And we're not a taxicab company."
"So, where am I?"
The sergeant pointed straight ahead.
"Downtown Pecos," he said.
"Couple miles that way."
"Where's the jail?" "Crossroads before the railroad, in the courthouse basement."
The sergeant opened his door and slid out and stretched, stepped back, and opened Reacher's door with a flourish. Reacher slid out feet first and stood up. It was still hot. Haze hid the stars. Lonely vehicles whined by on the highway bridge, few enough in number that absolute silence descended between each one. The shoulder was sandy, and stunted velvet mesquite and wild indigo struggled at its margin. The cruiser's headlights picked out old, dented beer cans tangled among the stalks.
"You take care now," the sergeant said.
He climbed back into his seat and slammed his door. The car crunched its way back to the blacktop and curved to the right, onto the cloverleaf, up onto the highway. Reacher stood and watched its taillights disappear in the east. Then he set off, walking north, under the overpass, for the neon glow of Pecos. He walked through one pool of light after another, along a strip of motels that got smarter and more expensive the farther he moved away from the highway. Then there was a rodeo arena set back from the street, with posters still in place from a big event a month ago.
"There's a rodeo there in July," Carmen had said, "but you've missed it for this year."
He walked in the road because the sidewalks had long tables set up on them, like outdoor market stalls. They were all empty, but he could smell cantaloupe on the hot night air.
"The sweetest in the whole of Texas," she had said. "Therefore, in their opinion, in the whole of the world."
He guessed an hour before dawn, old trucks would roll in, loaded with ripe fruit from the fields, maybe hosed down with irrigation water to make it look dewy and fresh and attractive. Maybe the old trucks would have whole families crammed in the cabs, ready to unload and sell all day, and find out whether their winter was going to be good or bad, lean or prosperous. But really, he knew nothing at all about agriculture. All his ideas came from the movies. Maybe it was all different in reality. Maybe there were government subsidies involved, or giant corporations. Beyond the cantaloupe market was a pair of eating places. There was a donut shop and a pizza parlor. Both of them were dark and closed up tight. Sunday, the middle of the night, miles from anywhere. At the end of the strip was a crossroads, with a sign showing the museum was straight across. But before the turn, on the right, was the courthouse. It was a nice enough building, but he didn't spend any time looking at it, just ducked around the side to the back. No jail he had ever seen had an entrance on the street. There was a lit doorway in the back wall at semi-basement level, with two cement steps leading down from a parking area. There was a dusty four-cylinder Chevrolet in one corner. The lot was fenced with razor wire and hung with large notices warning unauthorized parkers their cars would be towed. There were yellow light bulbs mounted on the fence posts. Clouds of silent insects crowded each of them. The blacktop was still hot under his feet. No cooling breezes back there. The jail door was scarred steel and had no admittance stenciled across it in faded paint. Above it
was a small video camera angled down, with a red diode glowing above the lens. He went down the steps and knocked hard on the door, stepped back a pace so the camera could pick him up. Nothing happened for a long moment. He stepped forward and knocked again. There was the click of a lock, and a woman opened the door. She was dressed in a court bailiff's uniform. She was white, maybe 50, with gray hair dyed the color of sand. She had a wide belt loaded with a gun and a nightstick and a can of pepper spray. She was heavy and slow, but she looked awake and on the ball.
"Yes?" she said.
"You got Carmen Greer in here?"
"Yes."
"Can I see her?"
"No."
"Not even for a minute?"
"Not even."
"So when can I?"
"You family?"
"I'm a friend."
"Not a lawyer, right?"
"No."
"Then Saturday," the woman said. "Visiting is Saturday, 2 to 4.
"Almost a week." "Can you write that down for me?" he said. He wanted to get inside. "Maybe give me a list of what I'm allowed to bring her?"
The bailiff shrugged and turned and stepped inside. Reacher followed her into the dry chill of an air conditioner running on high. There was a lobby. The bailiff had a high desk like a lectern, like a barrier. Behind it were cubbyholes covering the back wall. He saw Carmen's lizard-skin belt rolled into one of them. There was a small Ziploc bag with the fake ring in it. Off to the right was a barred door, a tiled corridor beyond.
"How is she?" he asked.
The bailiff shrugged again.
"She ain't happy."
"About what?"
"About the cavity search, mainly. She was screaming fit to burst. But rules are rules."
"And what?
She thinks I enjoy it either?"
She pulled a mimeographed sheet from a stack, slid it across the top of the desk.
"Saturday, 2 to 4, she said, "like I told you. And don't bring her anything that's not on the list, or we won't let you in."
"Where's the DA's office?"
She pointed at the ceiling. "Second floor, go in the front."
"When does it open?"
"About 8:30.
"You got bail bondsmen in the neighborhood?"
She smiled.
"Ever see a courthouse that didn't? Turn left at the crossroads."
"What about lawyers?"
"Cheap lawyers or expensive lawyers?"
"Free lawyers." She smiled again.
"Same street," she said. "That's all it is, bondsmen and community lawyers."
"Sure I can't see her?"
"Saturday,
you can see her all you want."
"Not now?
Not even for a minute?"
"Not even."
"She's got a daughter," Reacher said irrelevantly.
"Breaks my heart," the woman said back.
"When will you see her?"
"Every 15 minutes, whether she likes it or not. Suicide watch. Although I don't think your friend is the type. You can sell pretty easy. And she's a tough cookie. That's my estimation. But rules are rules, right?"
"Tell her Reacher was here."
"Who?"
"Reacher. Tell her I'll stick around."
The woman nodded, like she'd seen it all, which she probably had.
"I'm sure she'll be thrilled," she said.
Then Reacher walked back to the motel strip, remembering all the jailhouse duty he'd pulled early in his career, wishing he could put his hand on his heart and say he had acted a whole lot better than the woman he had just met. He walked almost all the way back to the highway until the prices ducked under $30, picked a place, and woke the night clerk and bought the key to a room near the end of the row. It was worn and faded and crusted with the kind of dirt that shows the staff isn't all the way committed to excellence. The bedding was limp, and the air smelled dank and hot, like they saved power by turning the air conditioning off when the room wasn't rented. But it was serviceable. One advantage of being ex-military was almost any place was serviceable. There was always somewhere worse to compare it with. He slept restlessly until 7 in the morning and showered in tepid water and went out for breakfast at the donut shop halfway back to the courthouse. It was open early and advertised Texas-sized donuts. They were larger than normal and more expensive. He ate 2 with 3 cups of coffee. Then he went looking for clothes. Since he ended his brief flirtation with owning a house, he had gone back to his preferred system of buying cheap items and junking them instead of laundering them. It worked well for him. It kept the permanence monkey off his back, literally. He found a cheap store that had already been open an hour. It sold a little bit of everything, from bales of cheap toilet paper to work boots. He found a rack of chinos with the brand labels cut out. Maybe they were flawed. Maybe they were stolen. He found the right size and paired them with a khaki shirt. It was thin and cut loose like something from Hawaii, but it was plain, and it cost less than a Texas-sized donut. He found white underwear. The store had no fitting rooms. It wasn't that kind of a place. He talked the clerk into letting him use the staff bathroom. He put on the new gear and transferred his stuff from pocket to pocket. He still had the 8 shell cases from Carmen's Lorsen rattling around like loose change. He weighed them in his hand and then dropped them in his new pants pocket. He balled up the old clothes and stuffed them in the bathroom trash, went back out to the register, and paid $30 in cash. He might get 3 days out of it. $10 a day just for clothes made no sense at all, until you figured a washing machine cost $400, and a dryer another 3, and the basement to put them in implied a house which cost at least $100,000 to buy, and then tens of thousands a year in taxes and maintenance and insurance and associated bullshit. Then, $10 a day for clothes suddenly made all the sense in the world. He waited on the sidewalk until 8 o'clock, leaning against a wall under an awning to stay out of the sun. He figured the bailiffs would change shifts at 8. That would be normal. And sure enough, at 5 minutes past, he saw the heavy woman drive herself out of the lot in the dusty 4-cylinder Chevrolet. She made a left and drove right past him. He crossed the street and walked down the side of the courthouse again. If the night shift won't help you, maybe the day shift will. Night workers are always tougher. Less regular contact with the public, less immediate supervision, makes them think they're king of the castle. But the day worker was just as bad. He was a man, a little younger, a little thinner, but otherwise the exact equivalent of his opposite number. The conversation was just the same. Can I see her? No. When, then, Saturday, is she okay, as well as can be expected? It sounded like something you would hear in front of a hospital from a cautious spokesperson. The guy confirmed that only lawyers were allowed unrestricted access to the prisoners. So Reacher came back up the steps and went out looking for a lawyer. It was clear that the events of the previous night had left the Red House stunned and quiet, and depopulated, which suited the killing crew just fine. The ranch hands weren't there, the tall stranger was gone, and Carmen Greer was gone. And her husband, obviously. That left just the old woman, the second son, and the granddaughter. 3 of them, all at home. It was Monday, but the kid hadn't gone to school. The bus came and went without her. She just hung around, in and out of the barn. She looked confused and listless. They all did, which made them easier to watch. Better targets. The 2 men were behind a rock, opposite the ranch gate, well hidden and elevated about 20 feet up the slope. Their view was good enough. The woman had dropped them 300 yards north and driven back toward Pecos.
"When do we do this?" they had asked her.
"When I say,"
she had replied. Richard turned left at the crossroads in the center of Pecos and followed a street that ran parallel with the railroad tracks. He passed the bus depot and hit a strip that might have started out as anything, but now was made up entirely of low-rent operations serving the courthouse population, bail bondsmen, and storefront legal missions, like the night shift woman had said. The legal missions all had rows of desks facing the store windows, with customer chairs in front of them and waiting areas inside the doors. All of them were grimy and undecorated and messy, with piles of files everywhere, and notes and memos taped and tacked to the walls next to the desks. 8:20 in the morning, they were all busy. They all had patient knots of people waiting inside and anxious clients perched on the customer chairs. Some of the clients were on their own, but most of them were in family groups, some of them with a bunch of children. All of them were Hispanic. So were some of the lawyers, but overall they were a mixed bunch. Men, women, young, old, bright, defeated. The only thing they had in common was they all looked harassed to the breaking point. He chose the only establishment that had an empty chair in front of a lawyer. It was halfway down the street, and the chair was way in back of the store, and the lawyer was a young white woman of maybe 25, with thick dark hair cut short. She had a good tan and was wearing a white sports bra instead of a shirt, and there was a leather jacket slung over the back of her chair. She was nearly hidden behind two tall stacks of files. She was on the phone, and she was at the point of tears. He approached her desk and waited for a sit-down gesture. He didn't get one, but he sat down anyway. She glanced at him and glanced away, kept on talking into the phone. She had dark eyes and white teeth. She was talking slow Spanish with an East Coast accent, haltingly enough that he could follow most of it. She was saying, "Yes, we won," then, "but he won't pay. He simply won't. He just refuses." Time to time she would stop and listen to whoever was on the other end. Then she would repeat herself, "We won, but he still won't pay." Then she listened again. The question must have been, "So what do we do now?" Because she said, "We go back to court to enforce the judgment." Then the question was obviously, "How long does that take?" Because she went very quiet and said, "A year, maybe two." Reacher heard clear silence at the other end and watched the woman's face. She was upset and embarrassed and humiliated, blinking back tears of bitter frustration. She said, "Llamaré de nuevo más tarde," and hung up. "I'll call again, soon." Then she faced front and closed her eyes and breathed deeply through her nose, in and out, in and out. She rested her hands, palms down on the desk, breathed some more. Maybe it was a relaxation technique they taught you in law school, but it didn't seem to be working. She opened her eyes and dropped the file into a drawer and focused between the piles of paper across the desk at Reacher. "Problem?" he asked her. She shrugged and nodded all at the same time, an all-purpose expression of misery.
"Winning the case is only half the battle," she said. "Sometimes a lot less than half, believe me."
"So what happened?"
She shook her head.
"We don't need to go into it."
"Some guy won't pay up," Reacher said.
She shrugged and nodded again.
"A rancher,"
she said, "crashed his car into my client's truck, injured my client,